Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. Welcome to another Rooted in Reliability podcast live from SMRP 2019. Here joining me is Keith Staten from Weyerhaeuser. Welcome, Keith.
Thank you, James.
So, Keith, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? What do you do at Weyerhaeuser? How long have you been in maintenance and reliability? All that great stuff.
Okay, well, basically, I got into maintenance and reliability in the U.S. Navy years ago. That's where I cut my teeth on maintenance. Because, you know, when you're in the middle of the ocean, maintenance is very important. But from there, I went to work for a die-casting, aluminum die-casting company making automotive parts. I was there for about 25 years. Did everything there was there. Got into maintenance management, maintenance engineering management. Started traveling, opening up plants for that company around the globe. Moved on from there to another die-casting company, and then came to Weyerhaeuser, which is totally different from automotives. But one of the nice things about maintenance and reliability is it's a very portable profession. You still have the same systems. You still have the same problems, same issues, same things to overcome. Manufacturing, in that respect, is pretty much the same regardless of what you're making. I'm the maintenance and reliability director for 14 plants for Weyerhaeuser on the Eastern Seaboard and the Gulf South, and I've been with them just over 5 years now.
All right, excellent. And you presented a paper this week at SMRP, Gaining Control of Your Process Control.
Yeah, that's. I just put that together this week. It's something I have to control myself when I get to talking about it because it's... it sounds like an oxymoron. We gaining control of your process control because we call it process control. Yep. And what you'll find in many manufacturing companies is they have no control over it or very little. They just assume because it's called process control, well, it's already controlled. And the fact of the matter is, we don't look at it nearly as much as we should.
All right, I got to agree with that. But for those that may not know. What is process control?
Well, process control, you need to break that down a little bit more. What I'm referring to is automatic process control, because there is manual process control. But automatic process control, it just uses industrial controls to successfully produce something safely, economically, and in a much speedier fashion than you could manually. It has to do with, can even apply to chemical controls too, if that particular process uses chemicals. But it's anything that's involved in the process in manufacturing, any kind of setting, any kind of time setting, any kind of measurement setting that controls your process that can be done automatically better than manually. Because, you know, quite some time ago, not that long ago, we used to do it manually. Yep. Now we're allowed to do these things automatically. We can do it with a smaller group of people and still accomplish the same things in a much quicker and safer manner.
All right, so it's the settings in the HMI, the PLC programs.
Yes.
It's, you know, our process parameters for temperatures, heats, speeds, feeds, all those things.
Correct.
All right, excellent. So why is it so important that we keep this stuff under control to begin with? Why do we need to make sure that people can't just change whatever they want, whenever they want?
The first and foremost is we want to do things in a safe manner. It's always number one on my list. And when people go in and are allowed to just make changes at an HMI or something without any kind of controls over it, you don't always know the repercussions of that change. And I've seen it happen in manufacturing facilities where somebody thinks they know a better way and they'll go and change a parameter. But once you get past the safety aspect of it, any kind of manufacturing, we want to maintain a quality standard. Ideally, we have the best possible way to make whatever it is we're making. the largest number, and with the best quality possible. And once we've got that set, if you change anything, you've changed that quality standard.
Absolutely.
So you've got something that's going to be changed now because somebody decided they wanted to go and change something without really vetting it.
Yeah, I've seen examples where people will turn up the heat and then try and reduce time. Or, you know, vice versa. They'll do things like that to try and speed up a process, get more throughput, but it's never been validated. It's never been tested. It's correct. Just a guess. And then all of a sudden there's failures in the field or there's failures during QC testing and there's all these things that come up. But that was all because someone just decided that they had a better way.
Exactly. It's amazing. Particularly, I've been fortunate enough to work in several different countries. The United States, we Americans here are very bullheaded, and everybody thinks we know the best way to do everything. And that goes into your workforce also. There's always somebody you've got out there that believes they've got a better idea, and there's nothing wrong with that. But you should bring that up to the proper people, to your management, to whoever you're working with, and say, hey, why don't we test this? And then you can try that. But you don't just go making changes, and that's what happens in a lot of companies today. And they don't even realize it, particularly in PLC programs. What I find is there's a lot of hands that are getting into PLC programs and making changes and causing problems. I mean, we're shooting ourselves in the foot.
Yep. We make a change, we don't understand the impact that's going to have either on the process, the machine control, or quality later down the road.
The basic example that I can give you, and I guarantee you it happens in many industries, is you take an automatic greaser, automatic lube system that you've got on a machine in any kind of plant. You're going to have some of them. And what happens is the alarm may start going off at 2 o'clock in the morning, and your maintenance goes out and check it. There's plenty of fluid in it. It's just there's a problem with the alarm system.
Yep.
So what do? They go out and they cheat that alarm off to turn it off.
Yep.
And that's okay for starters, but the problem is they turn it off and forget about it.
Yeah, they never go back and actually figure out what's going on.
Right, and then 4 weeks later, they actually do have an issue and it does run out and the alarm doesn't work and now you've burned up bearings and you've burned up you busted sprockets, you've done all kinds of things because you just simply made a change you did not document.
Yep, absolutely. So you've mentioned a few things about being able to just go make these changes to PLCs and those sorts of things. Don't passwords protection work on HMI, PLCs, or are those just, you know, things that automatically everyone learns after a couple minutes and that doesn't really give us that control? Is that not good enough?
You know, ideally, you would think that it would, and it should, and we do those with the best intentions. The aluminum die casting company I worked at, when we started getting control of things, we initially thought, you know, we're gonna give this password to certain select people in the plants. Like, for example, we'll give them to all the maintenance managers in the different plants. And we thought, they can have access to this, surely. And what happens is this, and it happened really quick, too. Somebody will have a problem, and they'll need to go in and look at something, or they think they need to change something, which drives me crazy, by the way, because if the machine is running and it's been running, the program didn't just change.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with it. But what they'll do is that they'll call that maintenance manager at 3 o'clock in the morning. He didn't want to get up.
No.
He doesn't want to come in. So what does he do? Hey, let me just give you the password. And that's it. You just open the floodgates. Now everybody's going to have it.
Yep.
So it does you absolutely no good, and you have to go reset everything. So ideally, yes, it should work, but no, it doesn't.
So I've had the same experience. Operators will just kind of watch what you're punching in. They'll figure out what the password is after the fourth or fifth guy comes by with it, right? They'll make some changes I've seen in the past, mainly around process control settings and in the HMI, not PLCs, but it happens. Now, you mentioned that if we make some of these changes, like we jump out the automatic luber that's working properly, is there a management of change process somewhere in here where we document that, we go back, we follow up, we risk assess it, or we go back and figure out what's going on? How do we control those temporary things?
There should be a rigid management of change process for any kind of change that affects process or the operation of equipment. Unfortunately, and I've had people tell me straight up to my face, a minor modification in a PLC doesn't require management of change, and I think that's bunk. It does require it, especially if you go in and you change how a machine is operating. You have to have a management of change, and you don't just document. That's the other thing. With management of change systems, sometimes we put in place a database, and we say, okay, we got to do a management of change. Somebody fills out a form. They stick it in the database, and that's the end of it, and they think that's enough. That's just the recording area. Management of change process has to include full communication with everybody that it comes in contact with. And a lot of the times we leave that out. We don't do the communication part. We think if we put it in a database, we're finished. And that's not the case. I would rather not use the database and communicate it than I would write it down and forget about it.
Yep. Yeah, I've seen where organizations, and they set a limit almost, or they differentiate. If it's a safety PLC, then we're going to manage, walk it through the management change process. We're going to get someone, a second person, to review the programming changes to make sure it doesn't cause any potential safety risks. They'll document those. But changing how the machine operates, they don't document those because to them it's not important, right? And I don't think that's right because, like you said, if there's a change being made, how it operates even slightly different, that's going to affect a lot of different things, especially if it's been running a particular way for a long period of time. All the electricians and mechanics know the sequence of events. All of a sudden, that's changed slightly. Now they think that's the problem as opposed to what something else that might be driving it.
Right.
So absolutely, the management of change is vitally important.
And the problem that you get, though, is you go to a company, you try to open their eyes to this, that what's going on. And they're, what you'll find in a lot of cases, in fact, after I gave that presentation, I had several people come up and get in line to come talk to me. And what they wanted to do was just unload on me and say, this is what's happening. I can't get anybody. And that does happen, unfortunately. You go to your management, it's the last thing they want to look at because it's, a lot of people don't understand PLC programming or process control. They don't know what goes into it. So they just figure, you know, it's control. We don't really need to worry about getting them all together as long as we're doing the right thing. You don't have an urgent need to make that change. And unfortunately, in my career, I've seen somebody almost killed. In fact, should have been. And just by sheer luck, was not. Over process controls that lack of, and this was quite some time ago, but you know what's sad about that is as soon as that happened, they got a big appetite to get control. As soon as somebody almost died, then the company wanted to do everything possible to fix this. But up until that point, they weren't even interested.
They didn't understand the risk behind it.
They did not at all.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
So when organizations have this problem, where do they start? What do they start doing differently to get gaining control of their process control? What do they do?
Well, I mean, it's going to depend on where the organization is at with their process controls, but what I found in my past and what I see in some of the other companies, unfortunately, what we do sometimes, even in this one single manufacturing facility, is over the course of time, we'll put in different kinds of process control hardware instead of sticking with one particular type. We may put into different kinds of PLCs instead of sticking with one particular brand. The programs get changed and modified, and they're not the same anymore, even if they're the same exact machine. What happens over time, if you don't have controls of it, somebody will go in and work on a problem on this particular machine, and they'll fix it, and it works great, but they don't move that change along to the other machines. And then later, they'll go and work on a different one, and that gets changed. Next thing you know, you've got different logic running the same types of machinery. So the first thing you have to do, in my opinion, and what I've done in my past, is you go through, and for all like machines, you come up with a program, that works, and it takes some time. But you start there. You get a program that works. Now, well, actually, I guess you better make sure you got the same hardware. That way you can have the same program. But once you get to, and it can cost some money to do that. That's another reason people don't like to just jump in. But the time that I'm talking about, we had three different kinds of PLCs running machines over the years. And they didn't have an appetite for spending the money to get them all alike.
Yep. But that's where, you know, we think back to design for maintainability, the initial design acquisition process, that's where we identify those things to prevent us having to go back and redo these, right?
Well, the steps we took then, and I guess, you know, this was back in the 90s, but the steps after that person, unfortunately, was almost killed, and they gained an appetite for doing this. The first thing that we did was we put a plan together to standardize all the PLC hardware controls throughout all the plants. I got buy-in for that, and it took a long time to do that. Because you can't just go out and spend that money all at once. So every time we would overhaul a machine, it got controls on it. And it took several years to get that done. In the meantime, we went through and the PLCs that were the same, we did create that program, that same program that would run all of these machines. So that once we got all the hardware alike, we put the same programs in it, everything was okay, but the the painful piece was we locked everybody out. We had six plants in one city, and then we had four remote in different countries, and there was only three people in the world that could make changes to a PLC.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate here. So I'm sure every plant lost their mind when you did this, and I'm sure some of their questions were, well, what happens if a PLC fails at midnight? Are we down now for 2 weeks until someone from Global gets over here and does these things?
Well, we thought about that. And basically what we did was for local plants, I mean, the ones that are in the same city, it wasn't an issue at all anyway. And we did have some people that lost their minds over it because they were the ones in there tinkering all the time. And we had other plants that didn't even care because they knew that I don't need to get in there and change that program. So, and by the way, I'm not advocating this as a catch-all solution for every industry. It depends on where you're at, and there's different solutions. This was done back in the 90s after somebody, there was almost a fatality. But so the local, just to give you an idea of what we did, though, the local plants wasn't a problem because we were set up to remotely get into every PLC around the world, the three of us were, or the three people and myself because they all worked for me. And it was painful for us because if somebody in China lost a PLC, and now, you know, they don't have access to put a program in. Then comes the question that you say, what do we just lost for Global? No, because what we did was we set up remote PLC stations in each plant around the world, and all they had to do was go up there and plug a PLC into it, put a cable to it, and call.
Gotcha.
Now, we had to get up at any time. I mean, I could tell, it got to where it was sad. I could see what time it was when the phone rang. I could tell you which country was calling. But it didn't happen very much. Because, again, once you got a program right, you don't have to keep going in and changing it.
It's not, like you said earlier, the program doesn't change itself.
No.
So something else, what else outside influence is impacting this issue, right? It's not the program.
But, yeah, I still today in 2019, this year, have heard a plant manager tell me when they were having a problem. I mean, it didn't tell me, but he told somebody in front of me, somebody needs to go and check that program. It's got to be in there. Which drives me mad because they hadn't changed anything. There was nothing in there, but that's where something must have changed. We just need to do a better job of educating people.
Yep, absolutely.
So, you know, we got to under standardized hardware, standardized programs, control access to those PLCs. Is there a way that you've seen where we can allow view access but not edit access so an electrician troubleshooting can see what inputs are being made or not made?
What we did, and it depends on the software, by the way, but at the time that we did this, the event that I went through that took several years to complete, we were using the Modicon software called Concept, and it had different levels of access to that software. In fact, we posted the password on every computer. Anybody could walk up and log in because we gave them the password, and we made it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Anybody could, but that only gave you the level to go in and view, which is what they were designed for in the first place. To go in and help you troubleshoot a problem,
yep.
And then go out and fix the problem, not try to cheat the program out. So we gave anybody that wanted access, we encouraged that. I wanted people to be able to go in and use that to troubleshoot. That's what it was for. But the higher password in order to download a program or make changes, no, we did not give that out.
Okay. I'm just wondering, because the view aspect of it is great for troubleshooting so we can understand what's going on in the field, and we don't want to take that away. Right. Okay.
If you didn't have that, there would be no need to have a PLC.
Yeah. So now if we put all this stuff in place, is there a testing or vetting process to make sure that any changes we are going to put in get actually approved? How do we handle when we legitimately need to make a change?
Right. And you know, again, the question would come up, does that mean that we shut down any innovation? Absolutely not. We thrive on innovation. Continuous improvement is a vital aspect of any manufacturing endeavor. But we did it in a controlled atmosphere. If somebody came up with a great idea, we would talk about it, discuss it, and say, okay, we want to try it. And I didn't care where it was at. Could be on the other side of the world. We would go and try this. But instead of just throwing it in and saying, yeah, it works, and walking away, no. We would put it in. We would watch it. We would stay with it. And we'd make sure that it would work for a week. you know, at least a week, you know, preferably longer. We would test every possible outcome that that change would work. Did it really benefit that particular machine and that system and that process? And if the answer was yes, and it was a great idea, we also had a two-week rule. And what that two-week rule meant was, if it's good enough for this machine, we've got machines just like this all around the globe, so within 2 weeks, that same change is going to go in everywhere. Yeah. That way, we always maintain the same programming aspect. And you can't, depending on the industry, you can't always, you're not able to do that. But I can tell you this, we had machines that had different, some differences. They were similar, but they had some differences. So we developed something, and I'm sure many people call it something else. We call it option programming. So where we had one program, and it may have several different options in it that you could execute, depending on the type of machine, you would just turn that on based on which machine it was in. And we also, the one thing I'm not talking about is, because we had to lock out HMIs, we still had to have the ability for people in the plants to change process parameters when they needed to. Like, we had over 1,000 different jobs in die casting. When they changed the job, we had to be able to change the process. But here we've locked people out. So that one of the key aspects we had, and now I think it's pretty commonplace, but we had an internal guru of programming in the IT department that developed a program. We called it a master control program. And what it did was it housed all the recipes, over 1,000 of them. Every possible process parameter that you could think of for every job was stored in this program. And it ran on the internal server. You could get to it through the internet.
Yep.
It was protected, but it could access any PLC in the world. And everybody had access to go into this program, but it was locked down tight. You had process control people at each plant around the globe that had a password for that, and it was really locked down. But you could go in and you could change a process parameter and communicate with the PLC with that program. And it also did the option programming too. You turn on a feature. Without that, we couldn't have done what we did.
Okay.
But now I think I believe those are mass-produced. Now you can go out and buy programs to talk to your PLCs and store all that stuff. We did it internally.
Huh. But that you gave the flexibility needed at the plant level.
Just not in the PLC itself. We took that off, yes.
Right. So you accessed it through the remote program. Some organizations will do it through HMI now. Some will do it through, like you said, a manufacturing execution system, but they had the ability to manage those changes, because sometimes we do got to make changes, but they were validated, followed up on, that sort of stuff.
It logged everything. It logged who you were, what you were doing. It logged it right now as you're doing it.
All right. Excellent. So we have that full traceability. We have questions. We know who to go talk to. We know how to revise and adjust and move forward. Where would you recommend people start down this journey? Because it seems like a lot of organizations don't have this under control. In a past life, numerous organizations where I were at, anyone can make changes to PLCs. Nothing was standardized. It was an absolute mess. And we didn't even know which backup copy of the program was the most current or most reliable when we had issues. So it's a common issue. How do we get started?
Well, the group that does the PLC programming is a tight-knit group. They're different. I like to call myself a recovering programmer. Because I do have a degree in computer information systems, and I used to do all of these programs. It's a different kind of group. We talk about it in reliability a lot, about the maintenance force that used to be rewarded for coming in and saving the day and coming out and being able to fix something really quick as it broke down. And we're getting away from that, and we're teaching people that we want to do predictive and preventive maintenance now. The one area that we didn't address were the programmers. We still today have people that will come in the middle of the night and fix a program and write off and the machine's running. They have the same kind of reward system for those people.
Yep.
We never addressed those people.
Yes.
And we have to get controls there. We absolutely have to. You don't have to lock it down like we did. Keep in mind, when we did this, it was just because there was almost a fatality. So we took control immediately. We sort of forced the culture change.
Yep.
Ideally, you can do it a little more gradually than that, and you would have more than three people have access. You'd have a little bit tighter controls. But you've got to start with your hardware. You got to make sure you've got complete hardware that is the same on like machines. You can't have different kinds of PLCs. You got to fix that. So you have to have buy-in from the executive sponsorship part to spend the money on it. Then you got to go through your programs. It's painstaking. But you have to do that. You have to go through and make all these programs the same. You don't want to come in. You want to stop coming in at 8 o'clock in the morning and find out you've been down because oh, we lost a program, we couldn't find the right one, and we dumped this one in, and it didn't work. Really? Okay, well, and that happens more times than you want to believe.
I can't count on my two hands the number of times that happened.
So those are self-inflicted. If we would just take those out, geez, our uptime would go up right away in most facilities. So you got to have a better organization. If you've got the same program put together and you went through and you fixed that, you're not going to worry about finding the wrong program. Get rid of the wrong ones.
Yep.
Get a storage, a place, get organized, because we're not organized that much. Everybody's got a laptop, and they got their own version of it. You don't store things on a laptop. You store it on a network somewhere.
Yep.
So those are the first places you got to start is there. Then you need to look at your system on how you're allowing people to change things in the process. Is it too liberal?
Yeah.
Do we have a culture where people will walk up and feel free to just change something? Because we have that a lot.
Yep.
And if we do have, we need to address it. You can try to talk to people and get them to stop doing that, but inevitably it still happens, and you never find out who did it, because when you ask, no one owns up to it.
Yeah.
It's always,
I really want to meet this not me or nobody
person.
Yeah.
Because they're all over them.
Exactly.
So if it takes putting some kind of password protection, that's the easiest way to change a culture, because you
lock them right up.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's where I would start. But you got to have the first place you got to start is at the executive level. You got to get a buy-in for this.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't, it's not going to work.
So when we go to get that buy-in, what are the benefits to doing this?
The biggest benefit that they want to hear is money. Money, I mean, that comes from uptime.
Yep.
I mean, you're going to, I would suggest that anybody wanting to gain control actually start documenting all of the times that you come in and something has happened and you've incurred downtime or quality issues or even safety issues because somebody got in and messed with your process. Because the problem is, in a lot of companies, we don't talk about these things. We fix them and move on. We don't, you can't even go out in most places. You can look into industry safety records for different things that happen in manufacturing. You won't find hardly anything as far as process controls that caused it, because people don't want to talk about that. They won't talk about them things. They keep them internalized. So start documenting these things. If you get the documentation that shows, look, this is how much money we're losing because we're just sitting there shooting ourselves in the foot over and over and over again. And over the course of 6 months, and you can lay that out to them, we can eliminate this 100% if you'll let us get control. Most of the time, that should be enough.
But then you can also add scrap costs.
All of the things that you're losing.
Yep.
Everything. Safety is the biggest one. I mean, I work for Weyerhaeuser. We have one line of business where it's sawmills. Big saws, big band saws going at very high RPM with very sharp teeth cutting logs. And it's amazing to think that in an industry like that, in close proximity of people working around that somebody could get into a PLC and make a change.
Yeah, there's a significant consequence there if something happens.
But we probably still have that happening in our industry as well. Because it's just not, I'm out of the process control area. I am talking about it.
Yep.
I'm trying to, even in my company, I'm trying to get people to open their eyes, because I've been through this before. And I don't want to go through the bad parts of it again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Keith, is there anything on process control we didn't talk about that you want to make sure you highlight? Or do we cover it all?
I think we covered most of it. It's just, once you get organized, it sounds like it's such a... And it is a big deal, and it's not easy to do. But once you get it in place, it's people buy into it a lot quicker than you would think. You're going to have those people that don't. They want to have the freedom to go in and make changes. You've got those people in every organization. But once you get them in an organized manner, they even buy into it. It's just trying to get things under control.
Yeah.
And once you get it under control, things work so much better across. There's just so many things you don't have to worry about anymore.
All right, excellent. I can see quality buying into this very easily, because consistent quality generally, right?
You're right.
So I can see how it'd be easy to get good cross-functional buy-in and support for this. So, well, Keith, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us today about process control, gaining control of your process control, and the importance of it. Thank you so much, and have a great day.
All right, thanks, James.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.